Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Pop Culture, the podcast that brings soft drinks to the top of the menu.
I'm Kat Brown, arts journalist, author, and 4.5 years sober.
And I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author, and lifelong teetotaler.
Helen, where the hell have you been? Where the hell have we been?
Well, you've been launching your 16 bajillionth book, I believe.
My 17th bajillionth book,
Oh, I apologise. so embarrassing. And I was on tour, excitingly. I was on tour with the Empire podcast for the month of March, and then, honestly, recovering for the month of April.
I mean, so. I have bought M&M's. Helen, I haven't colour separated them yet, but mm-hmm. I feel like that's something that we could do.
That is in my rider, Kat, for all future podcasts, yes. So yes, it's been a busy time and we decided to take a break, and we have still been recording interviews, so we have quite a few exciting ones coming up. But yes, we're back. Hello.
Yes.
So Kat, what are we drinking today?
Helen, I've got Bativo.
I mean, does it hurt? I'm sorry.
I have nodes, just like it, Pitch Perfect. Helen, is this the first time you've tried it?
It is. This is really delicious. It's got a herbal edge, but it's also like a syrupiness, like a quite kind of thick on the mouth. I don't know how to describe it.
I mean, it's sounding a little bit like bath oil from what we got there.
Oh, no, I don't mean that. I don't want to drink that, although now I want a hot bath. But no, it's really lovely. I'm having a great time with this.
It was actually probably a bit sneaky to put it in our Grazia piece back in January before Helen had actually tried it. But it is just a huge, huge name in non-alc spirits. It's also very fashionable, very chic, and lovely Grace Dent is very into it and flags it up a lot. My brother very kindly sent me a whole bottle of it in the post because he couldn't make the book launch my second book, which to be fair was the month after the first one, so I'm not surprised that people got bored of it. So this has been living incredibly happily in my fridge ever since. Clink, clink, clink.
Clink, clink. And a word, by the way, for your giant ice cubes. I'm a huge fan of a giant ice cube.
These were actually, I think, a housewarming present from our own Ollie Richards.
Yeah, if you want to make your drinks feel fancy, get a giant ice cube tray. As in, a tray for giant ice cubes, not a tray that is normalised size ice cubes and just giant. That would be
well, also
unhelpful.
Probably something that Shabazz says would cover on Instagram with his I'm rich, you're poor ice tray filling videos, which I just absolutely adore. But also, it stops everything melting. Although, to be fair, at the moment, anything melting is just not really an issue.
No.
It's still bloody freezing.
Spring may one day come. So we do have an interview this week, don't
yes.
we?
I'm very excited about this. Guys, we finally got Ben Branson. We put out our Ben Branson traps. We baited them. We just woke up one morning and lo, Ben Branson Christmas had arrived.
The founder of Seedlip himself.
Woohoo!
Hurrah!
Well, and also arguably the founder of an entire genre of drinks. If you have been living under a rock, Ben Branson is an inventor, entrepreneur and naturalist. He combined his family's farming heritage and branding prowess to create Seedlip in 2015. And yes, this new category of non-alcoholic spirits that is worth like over $1 billion, which is crackers.
Amazing, yeah. Then in 2022... Ben's diagnoses of autism and ADHD provided clarity, I think, for him, but also highlighted the significant challenges that both society and neurodivergent individuals face in terms of understanding diagnosis and supporting people with a diagnosis. So he founded the media charity Prism, and launched the Hidden 20% podcast, which, with the help of celebrity neurodivergent guests, aims to reshape societal perceptions surrounding ADHD, autism, dyscalculia, dyslexia, dyspraxia, Tourette's syndrome, and all the rest, conditions that are estimated to affect 20% of the global population, and a cause that I know is very close to your own heart.
Very close to my own heart, as is this podcast, which I bloody love. Joe Black was on, like, the first episode talking about Tourette's. He was on Drag Race UK. Anyway, as you might be able to tell, we were thrilled to chat to Ben and ask him about secret new ideas, the really quite hard reality of launching a new brand when you are one person, and the non-alcoholic landscape, less than 10 years since he and Seedlip changed it for good. Here's Ben. Ben, welcome to Pop Culture. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I know you've talked about this a lot over the years, but tell us a little bit about the background that led to the creation of Seedlip. It came from, what, 1651 recipe book, is that right? Or the idea, the sort of the impetus for it?
Yeah, I mean, Seedlip is literally, on reflection, a product of my upbringing. It's my mum and dad's background and what I care about in a bottle. Mum's side of the family, farmers, 300 years, used to use Seedlips, which were seed sowers baskets back in the 17th century, as all farmers did, to kind of hand sow and broadcast, as is the technical name. That's mum's side. So nature, countryside, farms, outside, building dens, rabbits, all that kind of just wonderful outdoor upbringing. And then my dad's an absolute townie. So he grew up in Leicester. He's been in the advertising and the design world for, well, nearly 40 years. And so I sort of literally have kind of gone, okay, mum and ingredients and farming and dad and design and brands and consumers and all that kind of stuff and put them together. And so I wasn't looking to create a business. I didn't think, oh my God, I kind of know what the world needs, or wow, there's this gap. What am I going to do to fill it? It was me just wanting to grow more herbs at home. I remember going into it. I was living just outside Marlow in Buckinghamshire in this little Hansel and Gretel cottage out in the woods on the site of where, during the First World War, when we sent troops out to kind of go and fight and understood that there was this sort of trench warfare was the way that it was going to be done. They built these training grounds, trench training grounds, all over the UK. And one of them was in this wood. And so the turrets were all still. A wonderful place. And, you know, I had a pretty big garden there. And I just went to the Sainsbury's in Marlow, I remember, really, really clearly. And you'll both know what I'm talking about when you kind of go and see the fresh herb section. And everybody thinks, oh, look at that lovely basil. And, oh, I'm going to get a little mint plant. And 3 days later, they die. And, you know, but it's the very same small selection of herbs. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of like, I wonder what else I can grow, because there must be loads of other stuff you can grow. And I just got on the internet and I started looking around, and I had this wonderful secondhand bookshop that I would go to and find lots of old books, and just opened up this amazing treasure chest of botanicals and herbs and plants and spices, and started growing some more. That took me down this rabbit warren of this book from 1651 called The Art of Distillation, and I found it as a PDF. You can Google it and you'll find what I found. Someone had scanned it in. And I was just like, wow, there's 200 ingredients mentioned in here. Things I'd not heard of, feverfew and bladderwrack, which is a seaweed, like all these weird ingredients. So that was great. And then all these drawings and these wonderful illustrations of distillation equipment. And this is back when they were making medicine. Back in the 17th century, people wanted to try and find the philosopher's stone. So the elixir of life, how we live forever. I mean, there are recipes in this book containing human flesh, containing animal flesh. Loads of remedial recipes using basically herbs and spices and using distillation as a method of extraction. Some of them are alcoholic, some of them are non-alcoholic. I was just fascinated. Anyway, there's a picture, a drawing, an outline illustration of a little copper still. You can buy those on the internet. So I did, and I bought a little 2-liter copper still. I just started playing around, and I just took mint from the garden, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. The feeling and the process and the moment of taking something from being a solid and turning it into a liquid, I was a fucking magician. I was hooked. I was like, this is wizardry. You know, this is magical. This is just so cool. And so I just kept doing it, and I wanted to keep doing it, and I wanted to try and do more things. And this was nothing to do with drinks. This was evenings and weekends, mucking around. And then I was driving to London and sat in a restaurant, in a very nice restaurant in King's Cross. And I was driving. Obviously, I wasn't drinking alcohol. And I got served this just absolutely disgusting pink, fruity, sweet syrup, fruit juice concoction. I just felt like an idiot. And
welcome to our lives.
There you go. This was 2013. And that just set off a bit of a chain of events, I guess, in my brain of like, why are they so rubbish? And maybe there's something interesting in what I'm doing that could be a bit more grown up at home. And maybe I could like work with my dad and work with my mom and work with the farm. And maybe I could take this to a farmer's market. Maybe I could just like have a go at having my own little thing on the side project. Mm-hmm. And that over the course of 2 years just transformed into taking over my life and my life savings going in and getting the Seedlip crest tattoo and my whole world just being about botanical history, distillation, and just anger and frustration at horrible, rank, childish mocktails and or plain boring just nonsense. And the goal was to get a bottle on a shelf.
And you still haven't been burned as a witch, so that's a massive win.
No, I am left-handed, so I mean, I would have been in real trouble. But yeah, I've been I have a copy from 1664 of The Art of Distillation. The original King George III's copy sits in the British Library. I've been to see that and I've handled that. And yeah, this magical little book has absolutely changed my life.
Mm. It seems completely incredible to imagine a drinks landscape now without Seedlip, not least because you've been so influential in all of the indie botanical and non-alcoholic spirits that have come up since then. It's completely revolutionized, certainly how Helen and I both drink now. It's not so much lemonade and it's more, oh, thank God, wider options. I'm astonished to hear that you actually met with some significant hostility to that idea back then. What was the worst reaction that you got?
Oh, I mean, you name it, I've heard it. This is never going to sell a bottle. What's the point? This is the shittest idea, excuse my language. This tastes like witch's piss. Like, I really do need to get that one tattooed because that's a keeper.
That's a future product name right there.
That's a special edition right there. This is like going to a hooker for a hug. That was another one that was a kind of real, really quite astounding. Yeah. And this is from the trade. This is from the public. Yeah, I remember standing in Selfridges when we launched and this guy came up to me. It'd be a sort of middle-aged guy. And, you know, I'm standing there with my little trolley and my bottles of Seedlip spice and tonic. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, kind of wanting people to try it and tell them how clever I'd been about distilling non-alc spirits. And this guy, just his face just turned immediately as soon as I said it was non-alc. And he was just like, I mean, which absolute fucking idiot came up with this idea? Why are you working for this company? This is fucking ridiculous. How stupid. You know, I just drink alcohol. You know, this real, like, big, masculine, macho, threatened reaction. And firstly, I was like, well, that idiot is me. You know, like, this is my baby. Hello. And secondly, like, you don't have to drink this. You know, if it's not for you, that's totally cool. I was just amazed at how strong the feeling was, because I also had the strong feeling and feedback of, this is amazing. Why has no one done this before? You're a genius. Oh my God, we've been waiting for this. This is going to be amazing. And so it was really, really polarizing. And I just held on to the fact that there was strength of feeling, good and bad. Like, the bad stuff kept me really grounded and continues to. And the good stuff kept me energized because I wanted to stop. I wanted to close the business every week. So I kind of, first 6 months were horrible. Absolutely horrible. And I had no idea what I was doing. I was totally overwhelmed. We heard from 100 countries in the first 3 months. I was invited to Buckingham Palace like 8 weeks after launch. I was on my own. I was doing everything. And I wanted to just tiptoe out there and just kind of go, hey, I've just spent 2 years doing this. Let's see how it goes. And it was like just being shouted at back. Mm. And it was like, these are all amazing problems to have. Kept selling out, couldn't keep up. Lots of people wanting to feature Seedlip, do events, etc. But I was just like, whoa, I don't want this. I can't handle this. And that gradually, you know, from it being every week for the first 6 months, that gradually then was sort of bi-weekly, I want to close the business. And then it was like monthly, I want to close the business. And, you know, we saw it gradually, but I felt the same when Season launched, you know, in the middle of November. I wanted to tiptoe out there and, you know, people were shouting back and I was like, ah, shit, I don't know if I want to do this. Actually, maybe I'll just close the business. And luckily my actions said otherwise, but yeah, it was a real moment when we launched.
I mean, I was going to ask, you know, if it felt different and easier this time, but perhaps not, but it feels like at least the landscape has significantly changed since Seedlip launched, you know, partly because of Seedlip, partly because of that success.
Yeah, from where we were 10 years ago when there was Beck's Blue, BrewDog were just about to launch their non-out beer. You could get some grape juice sort of masquerading in a wine bottle, and that was it. To now, my last count is there's 1,000 non-out brands now. One or two in 2016 when we launched. There were 3 non-out spirits in 2018, and there were 10 in 2019. And now there's hundreds. And so this category is, you know, is so new. But you go into a nice bar, restaurant, hotel, or to a nice event, or probably to a dinner party, chances, I would hope, are much higher that you are going to get something that you like and that it feels good in your hand, feels like you've been thought of, that's non-alc. And that's all I want. That's all that's important to me, regardless of whether it's Seedlip or Season or whatever. Just I want the impact and the change and the shift so that great drinks, regardless of their ABV, is a normal thing. And that having that choice is a normal thing. That's the irony. The irony of the goal of all of this, whether it's changing how people drink or it's changing the world and neurodivergence, is all just the goal. It's normal. Yeah. The goal is just that it's normal. And that's a very unsexy goal, right? When you're chasing changing something so that it's normal, that's as simplified as I've been able to make it.
That's the big one though, yeah.
It's like we've seen with coverage of the trans community, particularly in British media, obviously there's been a lot of chat around ADHD, autism. I've literally written a book called It's Not a Bloody Trend, just so I can hold up the cover and wave it around. You've done incredible things, even in the very brief period that your new podcast, The Hidden 20%, has been live, and we'll come on to that in a bit. It is that normalisation. And I mean, Helen and I are coming at this podcast from the positions of a teetotaler in Helen and I'm sober. But there are so many reasons for people to want to drink a decent non-alcoholic drink when they go out for supper. You spoke about driving, obviously pregnancy, antibiotics, and also just not liking the taste. Yep. And being able to normalize these things and to widen the landscape, it's a phenomenal task, but it is still one sectors ignore.
I find it absolutely incredible that choosing not to do something can be such a thing, right? Like it can be a problem, can be threatening, can be questions. I find it, and it's yes, there's aspects of that within the world of, you know, meat and veganism and vegetarian, yes, to a certain extent. But I feel like with alcohol and with drinking in general, it's so charged, it's so ingrained, it's so loaded. Yeah. And it's just a fucking drink.
I 100% agree. As somebody who, you know, I've never drunk. So like I went through university in the 90s, not drinking. And I think it's
not drinking
older.
Alcohol.
Not drinking alcohol, I should say, yes.
I hope you were drinking.
Very much a believe in hydration, yeah.
Look, she has beautiful skin, a lifelong water drinker. Yeah.
but it really, like, people used to be very, very threatened. And it used to be like, if you said you weren't drinking, they started going, oh, well, I quit once for a month. I quit, you know, it's, and yeah. I don't care. I mean, with great respect, you know. But I think that is beginning to change. It feels like the shift is happening, right? And that people are just saying, cool, okay, you're not drinking, I'm drinking alcohol, it's fine, whatever
it is. And as soon as there's great choice, and as soon as there's some normalization around it, those questions will go away, right? Yeah. And the need to justify will go away, and people won't whisper to bartenders, can you make mine non-alcoholic, or you know. And people won't kind of feel like they're constantly being attacked as to whether they're pregnant or not. You know, just it just becomes a so what. Mm. And that's, yeah, I am, and I will be continually and eternally fascinated by the psychology around, you know, just around alcohol, non-alc, drinking, socializing. Because how we socialize, where we socialize, has so dramatically changed. And we had two ways to socialize historically, and that was pub and club. And guess what? You know, I can't remember the last stats, but we're something like still two pubs closing every day in the UK. Mm-hmm. And we're now down to about 500 nightclubs, right? And so, And the pub industry and the nightclub, nighttime industry all blame the government, but they just haven't adapted, because we've got coffee shops. There's now 40,000 coffee shops in the UK. Like, we didn't say, shall we go for a coffee? We said, should we go to the pub? Should we go for a drink? That was how we did it. And you go and have fun past 11 o'clock at night by going to a club, and that was it. That's all you could do. Well, now, guess what? The average bedtime in the UK, I think from 10 years ago, has already gone down by an hour to like 10:30. You know, and so everybody, amongst all the, we need good sleep and how important that is to their eyes of Deliveroo and Netflix and just the way that the younger generation socialize, which guess what, is not in real life most of the time. It's fascinating, sort of outside looking in,
yeah,
on all we're really talking about is where we socialize and what we're doing. Yeah. And when the focus isn't just on alcohol, it's on having a great time and who you're with, and yeah, great food and great drinks, it just changes the priority and it changes the hierarchy. And I think that's really exciting.
And we've seen clearly that once people like you and other companies start to invest in non-alcoholic drinks, that, good Lord, shock horror, there's an entire segment of society with tons of money to spend who will gladly spend it. We don't, I mean, obviously it is lovely to have a glass of water. I'm desperately trying to increase the amount that I drink. I'm very bad at it. But if you go to if you go to anywhere, basically, you still want to be able to have a nice drink and sit down and have that, you know, social moment, and also something that is delicious. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, to be frank, you hopefully did very well out of that Diageo deal a few years ago when they became majority shareholders. You could have just left the non-alc drink sector behind you. You'd done wonders for designated drivers and non-drinkers the world over. Take your tattoo, move on. What on earth, what keeps you interested in it?
I must be a sucker for punishment. If starting a food and drink business was only a logical exercise and you looked at the failure rate, 9 out of 10, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't go near it. You would not touch it with a barge pole. I was very, very naive with Seedlip and very, just totally unaware. I didn't have a clue. I'd not worked in the drinks industry. I didn't know what I was doing. To now do it a second time, knowing a bit more about what to do, tells me that my delusion levels are even more increased.
Helen, call a doctor.
I cannot not create and make things. It's not about business, and it's not about scale, and it's not about money, and I have to express myself, and I'm fascinated obviously by the natural world and plants and flavor and taste, and I'm just resolutely focused on creating win-wins, and the win-wins are I get to express myself and it has a place and a need in people's lives, and that doesn't matter whether it's a drink or it's a podcast or a charity or whatever it is. Now, I see the blueprint of non-alc and socializing and moderation, and I am able to absorb all of that and then find the gaps or find the kind of missing connections. But you know, season started exactly in the same way that Seedlip started. It started with me spending £450 on an apothecary kind of ingredients list of ordering really weird and random dried ingredients and wanting to extract their flavor individually and seeing if I could put together blends of cocktail bitters. And that started in 2017, and that started, you know, in my kitchen. And I have this weird impatience and patience of I want to get on with stuff and I want to make stuff happen, but I can also bide my time and also wait. And yeah, seasons, you know, been in my brain since 2017, but we only launched November 2023. And the next project that I'm doing, fuck, I started thinking about 15 years ago.
Wow. Well, I want to talk about flavor though, because so you have some training, as a chef. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting to me. We've talked to another couple of people already on the podcast who've also are coming from a chef background rather than maybe a drinks background. And I think that's fascinating. It's such a part of the job is dissecting and recombining and reimagining what flavors can do.
It's first principles thinking. Mm-hmm. So it's not thinking back, it's not thinking down, it's not thinking stripping things away. It's building up and thinking from nothing. And what could be rather than what's already been, and therefore what could be different or maybe a little bit better or worse or taken out. And so I am in my heart, I'm a cook and a farmer, right? That's my heart. My heart is not, I'm not a mixologist. Yes, I can make really good drinks, but I'm not a bartender. Yeah. It's about, there are 47,000 edible plants in this world, which is insane. And we don't get to taste most of those. But how incredibly exciting to imagine new and different and unique ways of putting ingredients together that people can try, rather than going, oh, let me copy what's already been done, or let me look at someone else's recipe. They don't. You know, Johnny Lake at Trivet, he doesn't do that when he comes to create a dish for his two Michelin star restaurant. He's not kind of going, let me get that bolognese recipe out and have a play with it. He's going, oh my God, what's in season and what can I put this with and what format's that going to come with? And that is so exciting to me. And that's where the potential and sort of opportunity, I think, for all drinks, right, lies, regardless of the ethanol content in them, the taste and flavor, yeah, and the application. I just think that's endless possibilities.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So what's the next project?
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. I knew.
No. It's only, I know you probably won't tell us, it's because we can do Guess Who. Helen was wondering if it might be something along the lines of a cookbook, because obviously you flagged the amazing things that you can do with season and food as well. Launched a charity and a podcast, for goodness sake. I mean, this is quite a wide-ranging portfolio that you're getting. Give us a little hint, just for us, just between you, brand new, as of an hour ago, pals.
So I set up this, I set up this company called Pollen Projects, and it's a very grandiose term. It's a non-out venture studio, which is basically just a way of saying, hey, I'm not done with one project. There's multiple projects, and we want to create this portfolio. And it's all about non-alc and moderation, and they're my ideas, and they've been around for quite a while in my brain, and I'm putting them into practice. And so Season is the first project. And then we've got another couple of projects that are going to launch over the next sort of 12 to 18 months. And the second one, I am building a laboratory for.
Amazing.
On the site of a monastery from the 1100s.
Amazing.
Blissful.
And I'm really excited about it. I'm really, really excited about it. So that is all I can tell you. But
non-alcoholic Benedictine, it writes itself.
I am really excited about it, and it's not out there, and we're not waiting 18 months for some big reveal. We're going to be sharing the journey, documenting what's going on. It's going to be a real radical level of transparency around it. And yeah, just really excited about it. So there's that that's coming, and obviously, yes, I do well when I'm spinning plates, and I thrive on that edge of, oh, I'm a bit fucking stretched, but it's okay.
It's a good place to be. We tried Season for the first time at the Fat Duck when we went for their
what a start!
Oh my god. Just absolutely mind-blowing. I have never had drinks like it in my life. It must feel good. It must feel sort of encouraging when, you know, places like that, when some of these great restaurants and bars that you've worked with are like, yes, we absolutely want to work with you. We want your products here. Are there kind of like great white whales that you're still chasing? Are there places you really want to work with? Or is it kind of like, if they don't see what I've got at this point, like, come on, guys, you know?
Oh, it's, you know, Fat Duck were one of our first Seedlip accounts as well. And you're just like, well, we must be doing something right. You know, I went to see Gordon Ramsay's right-hand man, Jockey, before we launched Season. And he tried Season Light first, and he just sat back in his chair and was just like, whoa, I am back at the Fat Duck. And it reminded him when he was like legendary R&D man at the Fat Duck before he joined Brett at the Lebri, and obviously before he joined Gordon Ramsay. He was just transported to like, oh my God, I am back at the Fat Duck. And that was just like incredible to watch and witness. But the response we've had, you know, I mentioned Johnny Lake before, and he was head chef at the Fat Duck when Seedlip was there before he set up Trivet with Isa. And, you know, he's like, chef's palates, I'm obviously in awe of. They're different from bartenders in the sense that bartenders have to consider, are thinking in lots of other different paradigms at times of classics and styles and formulation of recipes and service. And whereas, and yes, they can drink something and obviously decide whether it tastes good or not. But I don't know, a chef's palate, I love the bartending world, but a chef's palate means the world to me. And so to have listings in, you know, Luca and Tom Kitchen's Kitchen and all these Michelin star restaurants so early on, they're the gatekeepers of taste. And they're also the gatekeepers of taste, not just in the industry, but to the public. We've probably got 250 of the UK's best, you know, Michelin star restaurants, five-star hotels, top cocktail bars, all taking season, which is just, is mega. And to hear, you know, someone say to me, these are your best liquids yet, i.e. not, obviously I love Seedlip and I'm really proud of those liquids, but yeah, I want to keep pushing the boundaries and keep stepping it up. And the fact that, you know, you can have season in your food, in your alcoholic drinks, your non-alcoholic drinks, I don't really care what it kind of goes in, as long as the mindset and the understanding's there, that it's just like, come on, we want more flavor and we want to transform our drinks and our food, and foodies and food snobs and discerning palates, go for it.
I have a reasonable palate, but at the same time, up until I was trying season at home, the most adventurous creative thing that I'd done was probably mix apple cider vinegar with soda, put it in a posh glass and add some frozen fruit to it and call myself, you know, Heston Blumenthal. In the sad eventuality that I, Helen, or the person listening to this are not in possession of a professional mixologist / chef, what are your favourite things to add? There's light, there's dark. They're almost like salt and pepper for drinks. They're 0% bitters. You can pop in anything and they will act as a flavour enhancer to really sort of grip onto that ingredient and bring the most out of it, just like you do when you're cooking.
Yeah, do you want a job, Kat? Do you want to...
I don't think it could pay better than like podcasting, Ben. So obviously I'm very expensive. But what are your favourite random things to add seasons to?
Yeah, so we... Cocktail bitters have got this 5,000 year history, right? The ancient Egyptians were making bitters, medicinal bitters, 5,000 years ago. It was only in 1806, the first ever kind of cocktail recipe in print. And that recipe was very simple. It was spirits of any kind, sugar, water, and bitters. And this is where you had kind of Angostura starting to move away from being a medicine and into being used in the old fashioned and classic cocktail recipes. And so then you kind of fast forward to today, and Angostura, massive global brand, massive monopoly of the category, very well known, whether people use it or not, everybody knows that kind of newspaper oversized bottle with the yellow top. Anyway, I'm not here to advertise Angostura, but I just wanted to create something that felt modern and relevant, because cocktail bitters, they're these concentrated, intense liquids that traditionally have always contained alcohol. And I mean high alcohol, like 45% ABV. And they don't need to. You're not using cocktail bitters for their alcohol content. You're using them for their function. And what they're so good at is their seasoning properties in terms of adding flavor, in terms of binding and bringing ingredients together, in terms of enhancing flavor, adding complexity and depth and richness. Like they are, as you said, Kat, they are the salt and pepper. That's what they do to a drink or to food. And so we wanted to make it really, really simple for anybody to kind of go, look, three dashes and put it in your drinks, and you can put it in your food. And we made it a light one and a dark one. And a light one is for... it's for your sparkling water, it's for your gin and tonic, it's for your margarita, it's for your martini, it's for your kind of soda, that lighter, brighter sort of side. And seasoned light is super green, really zesty, good salinity, good bitterness, really Moorish. My favorite, I know you probably shouldn't have favorites, and there is absolutely nothing like it in the world. Mm. Or in the bitters space, or in it. It's a really special liquid to me anyway. It's great with white fish. I've had it. I put it in some macarons. Delicious. I put it in pesto.
Helen's ears prick up.
I put it in pesto. Ooh, yummy. Nice. I'm yet to kind of fully explode the kind of cooking food applications and opportunities for it. But it's just, yeah, it's super bright and super green. So as we're coming into spring, it's going to really kind of lean in. Season dark, really different, much more aromatic. We've got everything from like smoked cherry wood and cinnamon and cocoa and porcini mushroom and orange and red chili, cola nuts. Yeah, it's a real deep, rich, yummy, bitter. There's black pepper in there. I mean, you literally put sea salt in season light and black pepper in season dark. Season dark is great with ginger ale. It's great. Mm. Actually, it's brilliant with Coke, rum and Coke, whiskey highballs, old fashions, chili, bolognese, game, curries, baking, spicy, kind of treacly, those sort of flavors. They're vegan, they're non-GMO, there's no sugar in there, and you only need 3 dashes, and that's probably the end of my advert.
It feels like just along the way, you must be sort of helping promote crop diversity a little bit in all of this, just keeping very weird selections of herbs alive.
And that whole thing about having 30 plants a week feels dramatically underplayed now that we've got like 47,000 to choose from.
We do. And, you know, we talk about how many harvests are left according to the UN. We go off down a whole other sideline of conversation, but diversity, full stop in everything, is definitely name of the game.
Well, look, even though we should now charge you like £30,000 for that excellent advert for season, we actually started off with it on our very first episode when Helen McGinn was, we asked her what her like biggest launch of the year was going to be, and she highlighted season.
I love her.
And having both tried it, and she's very no-nonsense, she doesn't just, she knows her onions well. She's great. So if anybody is tempted to try that, do just go and just honestly just start throwing them around in anything. I think the only thing I probably wouldn't try them in is milk. Ben, we've had you for such a lovely long time this morning, and we really, really appreciate it. The last thing I think before we ask you for your Pop Culture Hall of Fame non-alc drink is really just to chat about the Hidden 20%, which is the podcast offshoot of your new charity, Prism ND. Oh, good Lord, my words. Prism ND, which is the tongue twister for the ages, apparently. Fine written down. I've listened to all of it, not just because I have ADHD and, you know, other exciting brain things, but you're an annoyingly good interviewer for somebody that is a drinks professional. How dare you? What have you most enjoyed about podcasting so far? You've had these wonderful guests on. What have your favorite moments been?
Oh, it's thank you for saying that, because I was nervous, obviously, about hosting and, you know, not wanting to let the guests down, not wanting to let the kind of cause down, and I didn't know how it was going to be. I didn't know how it was going to be sort of rooted in a chair for an hour in the bright lights, just one-on-one with another person. I didn't know how that whole experience was going to be, but you know, I take the guest research really seriously, and I've got a photographic memory. So that really helps when I don't have any set questions. I have one note card with 5 words on, and that's it. And so I've found that I'm two things. One, I'm able to be incredibly present within that conversation and that chat, because I'm not thinking about my next question. I'm not thinking I've got to get through these questions. It allows me to be really present in the conversation. And the only thing I need is which we have a timer in the kind of far corner, so that I can understand where I'm at in the conversation. That's really helped. And then the second thing is our guests have just brought themselves and been themselves. And I don't know whether they're not there to promote anything. It's very personal what they're talking about. They're literally talking about their brains and how they operate and how they think. And it's for charity, and it, you know, we want to kind of spread the message and help educate and inform people actually who are not neurodivergent, the public, society, on what all this stuff is about and the truth. And the truth is it's good and bad. And the truth is it's not all bad, and it's not all deficiency, and people aren't broken, and There's loads of amazingness that can come from it. And there's wonderful people that are obviously giving us their time to come and kind of share their stories. And so I'm really blown away and I don't want to close it. So that's got to be quite a good sign. You know, we've had over 5 million views on social and we're in the top 5% of podcasts globally and we've spent nothing. We're a charity. People give us their time and we take the production values really seriously, obviously. You know, we spend time with the guest before we record and we do a photo shoot with them. We have a coffee and people seem to feel relaxed and they get over that. Oh shit, I just missed my train, or oh fuck, I couldn't find the taxi, or they kind of, you know, dump their bags, take the jackets off, like relax, feel good about it. And you know, we're nearly finished recording series one and we've already got the first sort of 4 guests planned for series two. We've got loads of people reaching out, wanting to support and help. And we're just sort of going, holy shit, we're kind of, there's a place for what we're doing. It's great. And I would say now that I like hosting.
Oh, it's almost as if having honest and authentic conversations about neurodivergence is a really good thing rather than just following a very narrow editor-based agenda of whatever is most hated and feared that week. Who could have foreseen? Well, look, Ben, thank you so much for your time today. This has just been absolutely epic. Helen, do you have any further questions whilst we have him on the line?
I mean, we don't have another hour, so I have to check out with the premiere in Norwich. So I better let it go. But honestly, thank you so much for your drinks. As a lifelong teetotaler, they have been slightly life transforming because even if it's not actual Seedlip or season on the menu, it's something probably partly inspired by those successes. So it's been massively important.
And lastly, what non-alcoholic drink would you put in our pop culture hall of fame, Ben?
I was in two minds about this. There's one part of me that wants to go a seasoned Seedlip and tonic, a Seedlip, to be specific, Seedlip Garden, Fever Tree Tonic and Season Light.
Interesting. Going to try
the
that.
The best, simple, freshest, brightest, most delicious thing I personally can think of to drink. But then the other one wants, part of me wants to go, because you were talking about milk earlier, Kat. There is a technique in cocktail making. I don't know if you've come across it. It makes a style of drink called a milk punch. And that sounds, in really simple terms, and this is going to not sound nice, but... It's a way of using curdled milk to clarify and infuse a kind of stirred cocktail. And so what you end up with is, from my experience of Seedlip being in 40 countries and having traveled to lots of these amazing bars and tried lots of Seedlip cocktails, the hands down best Seedlip cocktails I have tried have always and consistently been milk punch style cocktails. It's got a fascinating history, the milk punch. You can make it at home, but anytime you see any kind of non-alc cocktail that's talks about whey or milk punch or any of that kind of stuff, choose it because it will be amazing. There's something in the fact you get this very clear, stirred, nice rocks glass drink that is absolutely rammed with flavor.
To
sip is... and a beautiful silky texture. So yeah, I'd go a Seedlip seasoned milk punch.
I've no idea how you managed to make curdled milk sound appealing, but you really have. Congratulations.
Thanks to Ben. Genuinely fascinating. I mean, just to see how far we've come, basically being laughed out of town by a lot of places when he was starting off, to those same places nowadays, you know, having conversations about how big their soft drinks menu needs to be.
And thinking about how things have changed as well, I got married in 2015 and I'm fairly sure that my non-alcoholic provisions were water and elderflower cordial. Woohoo! Obviously you were getting married in the not too distant future and are having your own plans.
Yes, and the venue offers elderflower cordial.
Oh, thank God. The security and safety of fizzy elderflower. What a joy. But we'll be able to find out more about that. And it's not, I would say, overkill to say that Ben and Seedlip really stimulated the amazing independent, basically flavour scientists that we're all able to benefit from now. It's absolutely fantastic.
It is. I was a little worried by his prediction that many of these brands are going to go out of business. Right now, we have something like 1,000 different brands and they won't all survive. I'm sure business-wise that makes sense. I just want them to. Yeah. I just want everyone to do well, really.
We went to Club Soda's shop in Covent Garden the other day and both of us spent a frankly exorbitant sum of money on absolutely killer delicious drinks to try and do our bit. But if there's something that we haven't covered here yet, and obviously we've only been going for a short while and only have so many taste buds and dollars in our pocket, then drop us a line, let us know what you think.
Well, now that I've had some of my Bativo neat, I'm going to try it with some sparkling spring water. Let's give this a go. Judging it about a bit. Still very nice. All right. Okay. The same but fizzier. Hurrah.
Oh.
I got so many exciting drinks at Club Soda that I still haven't tried yet. So much more experimentation ahead of me. I'm very thrilled. But yes, as Kat said, do get in touch if you have any suggestions, anything you'd like us to try. And if you have a favourite drink or a menu that you'd like to celebrate or any burning questions about soft drinks in general or particular, then you can email us at popculturedrinkspodcast@gmail.com or on Instagram. We are at popculturedrinkspodcast.
We've also got a lovely bookshop where you can shop our favourite non-alcoholic books, including ones by us and by our guests. Just go to bookshop.org and search Pop Culture, the Soft Drinks Podcast, or we've popped a little link in the episode notes.
And that's it for this episode. Do consider subscribing or leaving us a lovely 5-star review on your podcast provider of choice. And in any case, we'll see you back here very soon for more soft drinks chat.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.